I was reading back, I think it was actually August of 2017, through the book of Genesis, and I came across a statement made by Jacob that got me to thinking. And what I'm going to present to you is the result of some observations I made based on that statement. And the statement that intrigued me is found in Genesis chapter 47, verses 7 through 10. And I hope you don't mind if we'll read together. We'll be reading a number of verses in Genesis. That's always a good thing, but it'll take some time. Hope you'll be patient. But Genesis chapter 47, beginning at verse 7, this is near the end of Jacob's life. He has come to Egypt because there's been a famine in the land of Canaan, and he has been brought into the presence of Pharaoh by his son Joseph. And as he meets Pharaoh, he says this: "Then Joseph brought in Jacob, his father, and set him before Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Jacob, 'How many are the days of the years of your life?' And Jacob said to Pharaoh, 'The days of the years of my sojourning are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and they have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their sojourning.' And Jacob blessed Pharaoh, and he went out from his presence." I suppose the first thing that kind of shocked me was, at 130, to say your days are few? We live maybe roughly half of that if we're fortunate. But he felt his life was not very long. And of course, James says our life is like a vapor. And that is so true. But the statement that intrigued me was, he said his years have been few and difficult, as the NIV puts it. And the NASB, I checked in your pew Bible, says unpleasant. And it got me thinking, how could Jacob make this kind of statement about his life? His grandfather was Abraham, father Isaac and Rebekah, godly parents, so much going for him. How could he look back over that long span and say, it's been tough? Well, we have to begin at the beginning, and let's look at Genesis chapter 25 as we look at Jacob's life in a capsule. In Genesis 25, we begin at verse 19, and this is the birth of Jacob and his brother Esau. These are the descendants of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham was the father of Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took to wife Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean of Padan Aram, the sister of Laban of Aramean. And Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife, because she was barren. And the Lord granted his prayer, and Rebekah his wife conceived. The children struggled together within her, and she said, 'If it is thus, why do I live?' So she went to inquire of the Lord, and the Lord said to her, 'Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples born of you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other. The elder shall serve the younger.' When her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. The first came forth red, all his body like a hairy mantle. So they called his name Esau. Afterward his brother came forth, and his hand had taken hold of Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them." I looked at this just a few months ago when we were in Cork studying, and I noted that God granted this prayer after a 20-year period. And that struck me as interesting. God gave a yes answer, but it was on his time schedule. 20 years to wait for your wife to have a baby. That's interesting. And I wonder how often Isaac kept praying. Did he stop after a year? I mean, was it every day for all those 20 years? But, you know, Jesus tells us we are to keep praying. God does hear, but the answer may come when we least expect it. But anyway, be as it may, Jacob and Esau, twins, are born. And how would you feel if you were told by your parents that you were brought into the world in answer to prayer? That God caused you to be born because we asked for you. And here you are. That's interesting. If we read on, there's a few things mentioned about the boys. Look at verse 27. When the boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, while Jacob was a quiet man, dwelling in tents. Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Esau liked to be out in the woods, hunting animals, bringing them back, cooking them, preparing food for his father, and that made his father, Isaac, more affectionate towards him. Jacob is described as a quiet man, dwelling among the tents. And it made me think, what does a quiet man do with himself, or what is a quiet man noted for? I suspected as I thought about this, maybe he was somewhat of a thinker. Maybe even a deep thinker, very introverted and so forth. Not out there, you know, being loud and boisterous as I probably was when I was younger. You know, Jerry can tell you that. But I suspect, and just thinking this through a bit, as a quiet man, maybe as a thinker, what was he thinking about? Dwelling among the tents. Well, one thing I thought of is he probably felt or thought, why did God bring me into the world? My parents told me and Esau many times as we grew up, you're the answer to prayer. Okay, what does God want me to do? What's my purpose? Maybe he thought about the stories that he was told about Abraham, his grandfather. And I'm sure Isaac and Rebekah told him many times, him and Esau, listen, we're special people. God spoke to your grandfather Abraham. And he said, through your grandfather, the whole world is going to be blessed somehow. And he's going to make a great nation of us. And someone is coming from that history of ours that's going to bless the whole world. And Jacob is thinking, okay, what's my part in all of this? What am I supposed to do with myself to maybe be a part of this plan of God? And I can imagine Isaac telling Esau and Jacob many times about how when he was almost sacrificed by their grandfather Isaac. That was an incredible story. Tell us again, Dad, how he took the knife and was going to kill you, and then the goat appeared, or the ram appeared in the thicket, and you were saved. And Jacob was thinking about all these things growing up. And then I thought to myself, too, I wonder if Jacob was affected by the fact that he wasn't his father's favorite. I don't know. He says his mother loved him. He was closer to the mother. Maybe a mama's boy would say. I don't know. Maybe he thought about that as well. Maybe he wanted his father's affection more than the mother's. Who knows? But these are some of the things I thought about that maybe as a quiet man, Jacob was filling his time with. And then there's something else. He's named Jacob because he grabbed his brother's heel as they were being born. And yet that had a figurative meaning, as the text says, that he who deceives, someone who's sneaky and likes to use trickery to get an advantage. And I wonder if Jacob, as he progressed in life, thought, ooh, is my name more towards the figurative side of things, or does it just mean, you know, someone who grabs the heel? That may have played on his mind too, especially as he acted out his life. You know, as the story progresses in chapter 25, Jacob sees his brother one day coming in from the field. He's hungry, and in a very unwise move says, look, if you make me some food, I'll give you my birthright. I'm starving. What good is it to me? And the birthright meant that he would have the role of family leadership growing up. And whatever his father had in terms of wealth, he would get a double portion. And the rest of the family got the lesser amounts. And he gave that away for a bit of stew, some soup. And Jacob was quite happy to do that. Okay, that's fine with me. I get the better deal. So he did that. It made Esau angry, of course. And then, after his first sneaky move, we go to chapter 27, and we see his second sneaky, deceiving move. Jacob, with the help of his mother Rebekah, tricks his father Isaac into giving Jacob the family blessing. And this causes the real trouble for Jacob, as you recall. Let's look at chapter 27. I'll read a portion here, verses 30 through 45 in Genesis 27. And as soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, when Jacob had scarcely gone out from the presence of his father Isaac, Esau his brother came in from his hunting. He also prepared savory food and brought it to his father. And he said to his father, let my father arise and eat of his son's game, that you may bless me. His father Isaac said to him, who are you? He answered, I'm your son, your firstborn Esau. Then Isaac trembled violently and said, who was it then that hunted the game and brought it to me, and I ate it all? before you came, and I have blessed him. Yes, and he shall be blessed. When Esau heard the words of his father, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, bless me, even me also, O my father. But he said, your brother came with guile, and he has taken away your blessing. Esau said, is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright. Behold, now he has taken away my blessing. And then he said, have you not reserved a blessing for me? Isaac answered Esau, behold, I have made him your lord and all his brothers, and I have given to him for servants, and with grain and wine I have sustained him. What then can I do for you, my son? Esau said to his father, have you not but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. Then Isaac his father answered him, behold, away from the fatness of the earth shall your dwelling be, and away from the dew of the heaven on high. By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. But when you break loose, you shall break his yoke from your neck. Now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, the days of mourning for my father are approaching, and then I will kill my brother Jacob. But the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. So she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, behold, your brother Esau comforts himself by planning to kill you. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice. Arise, flee to Laban, my brother, in Haran, that's modern-day Turkey, and stay with him for a while until your brother's fury turns away, until your brother's anger turns away. And then I will send you, and I will fetch you from there. Why should I be bereft of you both in one day? So in order to save her son's life, Jacob, she sends him away on the pretext, I suppose, of him getting married. And that's what happens. While he's traveling, he's told by God of his care for him. And, of course, as we just sang a few minutes ago, he sees this dream, or has a dream where angels are coming up and down on this ladder. And that's a signal from God. Okay, you're running away for your life, but I'll be with you, Jacob. There's a connection between me and you in heaven and earth, and you're on that connection. You just keep your faith up, and I'll be with you as you journey. And then, of course, we continue on. Chapter 29, Jacob is traveling to see his mother's brother, or his uncle Laban, and in the east country, and he sees some people watering their animals, and his eyes light up on Rachel. Look at chapter 29. Verses 15 through 35, if you don't mind. He sees his uncle, and then Laban says to him in verse 15, behold, because you're my kinsman, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wages be? Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful and lovely. Jacob loved Rachel, and he said, I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel. Laban said, it's better that I give her to you than I should give her to any other man. Stay with me. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of the love he had for her. I suspect everyone would love that, to have a man do that for her. And if you're out there and you're single, I hope that you might find someone that has that kind of love. But we'll comment on that further in just a few moments. Then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife that I may go into her, for my time is completed. So Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. But in the evening he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob, and he went into her. Laban gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah to be her maid. And in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And Jacob said to Laban, what is this you've done to me? Did I not serve you for your daughter Rachel? Why then have you deceived me? Get a dose of his own medicine here. All right. Laban said, it's not so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Complete the week of this one, and we will give you the other also in return for serving me another 7 years. Jacob did so and completed her week. Then Laban gave him his daughter, Rachel, to wife. Laban gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel to be her maid. So Jacob went into Rachel also, and he loved Rachel more than Leah. And he served Laban for another 7 years. When the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. And Leah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben. For she said, because the Lord has looked upon my affliction, surely now my husband will love me. She conceived again and bore a son, and said, because the Lord has heard that I am hated, he has given me this son also. And she called his name Simeon. Again she conceived and bore a son, and said, now this time my husband will be joined to me, because I have borne him 3 sons. Therefore his name was called Levi. And she conceived again and bore a son, and said, this time I will praise the Lord. Therefore she called his name Judah, and then she ceased bearing. I think it's interesting that he's tricked, of course, into marrying Leah and doesn't want her. And as you can tell from the text, she knows that. She's quite aware of her fate. He gets a dose of his own medicine. And she, of course, is miserable in that marriage. What I find interesting is that we read a few moments ago that working for Rachel for 7 years seemed like just a few days. I guess we'd call that love. Okay? You turn to chapter 20, and we read the first 2 verses, and something changes here. When Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, she envied her sister. And she said to Jacob, give me children or else I die. Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel, and he said, am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb? Now that sounds like anger to me from a man who worked for 7 years and was just smitten with love. What's happened? Well, if you're married, you know what happens. The realities of marriage settle in. And there you go. And that's something to be prepared for too as well. So Jacob went through that as well, having now 2 women in his life, and there's a rivalry and there's issues over children. That's got to tax his mind. And you can feel the desperation of Leah in having these children and calling out to God, saying, now finally Jacob will love me. We'll find out if he does. I know, and I asked myself this question when I read this. How did Leah deal with her scheming father? At some point he said, listen, you're going to go into Jacob's tent. You're going to marry him. I thought there were probably 2 responses that Leah gave. The first one was something like, no, Dad, you can't make me do this. He wants Rachel. He's worked for 7 years. When he wakes up with me in the morning, he's going to see my face and he's going to go, what's going on here? He may throw me out. I can't do this. But maybe her father said, I'm your father. You're going to do it. Okay. The second response may have been something like this. Now, she's called someone who is weak of eyes, and then it's put in contrast to Rachel, who is very lovely. So she knew she was unattractive. And she knew, as the older one, that maybe her chances for marriage were getting slimmer. So maybe she said something like this, well, I know I'm not attractive. This may be my only shot at marriage. I don't like it. It's Jacob or nobody. And maybe he'll learn to love me over time, and maybe he'll just get on with his life. He'll grow to accept me. And so she maybe went along with that. Maybe that was her approach. I don't know. But in either case, I know it caused stress for Jacob. And you can imagine being married to 2 women, I suppose. I remember reading something a while ago in which these 2 people were talking, and the one fellow said, oh yeah, the New Testament definitely says you shouldn't be in a polygamous marriage. And the guy said, yeah, what verse are you talking about? And the guy said, well, Jesus said you cannot serve 2 masters. And Jacob probably found that out. So Leah had to have known that she had been palmed off by her father onto Jacob. But, she prays to God. And if you go back to the account, she gives birth to 4 sons. She gives birth to Levi, who gave the Jewish people their priests. And then she gives birth to Judah, who gave the world Jesus. This is the unattractive woman who was forced into this marriage. Well, there you go. In chapter 31, it's time for Jacob now, who has become a wealthy man and he has worked for Laban 20 years. It's time for him to go home. God speaks to him and says, I want you to go home and I'll protect you. But there's one key issue that has been on his mind, I'm sure, for many years, which has not given him peace. And that's how he left home. His brother Esau said, I'm going to kill him. When my father Isaac dies, I can do this. And Jacob runs away, and then even though he's become wealthy, and he has all these animals, he has two wives, he has all these kids and wealth, he knows that if God says go home, what's awaiting him? An angry brother. So Jacob prays to God for protection. God promises you will be protected, Jacob. But he has to have faith in this. And on this night in chapter 31, an interesting thing, I think Gary said again yesterday, is one of the strangest occurrences in the Bible. He wrestles with an angel. And you ask yourself, why did God make an angel appear to Jacob and wrestle with him? And as I thought about it, I suspect it's because Jacob was torn between having faith in his family history and faith in God's promises, and yet, how is my life turning out? It's not been all very pleasant up to this point. I mean, what peace could this man have had knowing that his own brother wants him dead? Even though he's miles away, he's thinking, he could find me. It could happen today, tomorrow, next week. I've cheated him. I'm a deceiver. He's going to find me. And I can't put that in my mind. Well, some thoughts about this. God says to him in chapter 32, or the angel does, after struggling with him, and Jacob was a strong man because he holds his own through the night against an angel. And he says to the angel, I won't let you go unless you bless me. And the angel says, look, you've struggled with God and with men and have overcome. I thought that was interesting. That was interesting. How could he say he was overcome or that he has overcome? Was it this mental battle that he was going on in his mind with? I suspect that Jacob, as a deceiver, as someone who was trying to gain advantage, was really, in a sense, trying to control the outcome of his own life, relying on his own resources. And that's a struggle because you can't live that way and yet rule out God. You've got to have both, maybe. But one tends to crowd out the other. And that's what I think Jacob was finding out here. And there's some more slides I want to read with you. Are we struggling with God? And this is the very thing that maybe parallels our life with Jacob. It could be we're living and trying to work out our own salvation by our own mental efforts. It could be that we're allowing sin in our lives and we know that we can't totally push God out because that's what sin does. It makes you push him away so you can justify your lifestyle. But there are struggles we go with it, that we experience. And Jacob was going through this himself. And finally it took God's intervention with an angel to say, Jacob, you're worried about Esau. I've told you I'll protect you. Stop the struggling. Trust me, it'll work out. I told you at birth, or I told your parents, two nations are going to come from you. You're not going to die. You have to survive, and I'll make that come to pass. But Jacob's struggling with that, and we might be too in some ways ourselves. The conflict, this is with the angel, brought to a head the battling and groping of a lifetime. And Jacob's desperate embrace vividly expressed his ambivalent attitude toward God, of love and enmity, defiance and dependence. It was against him, and not Esau or Laban, that he had been pitting his strength, as he now discovered. Yet the initiative had been God's, as it was this night, to chasten his pride and challenge his tenacity. Though the wrestling was physical, it symbolized a spiritual struggle between Jacob and God to determine whether Jacob, in self-will and self-reliance and guile, was to manage his own affairs, or whether he was to bow completely to God's management of his life. And I think at that critical moment, he realized, God is with me. I've seen him, in a sense, through this angel. I've survived. He's given me promises. My life can be difficult at times, but I'll make it. And now he's fortified. He's ready to meet Esau. And that's what happens. And it's successful. You know the story. They embrace. Jacob puts all the food, you know, the animals. It's for you, Esau. No, I don't want that. You're my brother. We're fine. They embrace. They cry. There's peace now. And Jacob's got to be saying to himself, thank you, God. Thank you for this. But just as he wins this victory, we come to chapter 33, and something very shocking happens. He has a daughter called Dinah. And Dinah is raped by a man from Canaan. Now, as a father, what does that do to your mind? I mean, to look at your daughter's face with tears and you hug her and you got to be thinking, why couldn't I have been there to save her? What was I? Where was I? What was I doing that I couldn't be with her to stop this attack? That's got to hurt deeply as a father. But what makes matters even worse is that his brothers say, oh, we're going to get revenge. We're not going to let this slide. They trick these men of Canaan. And while they're recovering from their pain of circumcision, they go in and they kill every single man in that city. They capture the women, the children, and they take all the animals. They loot and plunder this city. And the word comes back to Jacob. And notice what he says about this in chapter 34, verses 30 and 31. He's talking now to his two main sons. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, you have brought trouble on me by making me odious to the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites and the Perizzites. My numbers are few, and if they gather themselves against me and attack me, I shall be destroyed, both land, both I and my household. But they said, should we he treat our sister as a harlot? Again, here's a struggle with his faith. God has promised him with that ladder dream and with the angel wrestling with him that he's going to be protected. He's going to be kept alive because he's from Abraham and he's part of that lineage. But now he's afraid again. I'm going to be killed. Why'd you do this? So the suffering and humiliation of a daughter being raped and then having this incredible violence put on the people by his sons, this has got to wreck his peace again, doesn't it? Chapter 35, he's trying to make his way home now. And on the way, his beloved wife Rachel dies. She dies in childbirth while she's giving birth to his last son, Benjamin, the youngest one. And that's got to again affect him. Now he's with Leah, alone. And again, you wonder at this point, has he grown in his love for her? Or is he thinking, that's just what I need now. I'm with the woman I never wanted. We don't know. In chapter 37, though, as the story progresses, we come to a story about his son Joseph. And you know, probably one of the most beautiful stories in all the Bible, the story of Joseph when he is taken into captivity and brought to Egypt. But look at the first four verses with me of chapter 37. Jacob dwelt in the land of his father's sojournings, in the land of Canaan. And this is the history of the family of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was shepherding the flock with his brothers. And he was a lad with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought an ill report of them to his father. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any other of his children, because he was the son of his old age. And he made him a long robe with sleeves. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Now, I suppose parents can sometimes make this mistake where you favor one child, but we see the results here. He made Joseph this robe with long sleeves, it's a special garment just for him because he's the son of my old age. And yet it caused family friction. It says the brothers hated him. They couldn't speak peaceably to him. Now, do you think Jacob was aware of that? I suspect so. Most families know if there's friction, you know, the one brother doesn't talk to the sister and, you know, the father doesn't talk to the daughter and, you know, when they have a reunion, there's kind of like tension and, you know, you put up with each other. Jacob, I'm sure, was aware of that. And again, what's that do for his peace of mind as a man in old age? That's got to affect him. You know, and when his son is eventually taken by his brothers because they just want him dead. They want him out of the family because of the favoritism of Jacob to Joseph. They take him, as you know, and they throw him into a hole. He's taken out. He's sold into slavery. And in order to make it look like he's dead, they take his robe that the father made for him, and they dip it in goat's blood, and they bring it back, and they say, is this your son's garment? And of course, he knows it's his. He's made it. He sees the blood, and he just breaks down. And if you want to see his grief, just look at the verses 34 and 35 of chapter 37. Then Jacob rent his garments and put sackcloth on his loins, and he mourned for his son many days. All his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, But he refused to be comforted and said, "No, I shall go down to Sheol to my son mourning." And thus his father wept for him. Now again, this is a severe blow. You've had a daughter raped. Your beloved son is killed. You've had your brother hunting you down, in theory, for 20 years. And yet you're thinking as a quiet man, "But God brought me into the world because of answered prayer." Why? For this? I'm here to keep going through all these setbacks. Why? Why, God, would you do this or allow these things to happen? You're supposed to be from Abraham's seed. I'm sure Jacob had these thoughts probably over and over again. Every time he's doing well, then there's a setback, and then he's got to readjust and think about this. Well, we continue on then. He says, "I'm not getting over this. Don't try to comfort me. It's not that easy. Your words, no, I don't accept it." You know, I was thinking too, maybe you've heard or read of parents when they lose a child in a very tragic way. What do they sometimes do? They keep the bedroom just as it was when the child died. It's their last link to that child. They go into the bedroom sometimes, they sit in the bed, they smooth it out a little bit, look at the pictures, the toys, and maybe they handle some of the clothing. It's that last link to that loved one. And I had to think, maybe Jacob in some way took that robe periodically. Maybe he smelled it to get Joseph's scent off of it. That's all he had left. At least he thought that was all he had left. And if this is not enough for him to endure his favorite son being killed, in chapter 42, he has to endure a famine in his old age. Just the first two verses of chapter 42. When Jacob learned that there was grain in Egypt, he said to his sons, "Why do you look at one another?" And he said, "Behold, I've heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down and buy grain for us there, that we may live and not die." Again, even in his old age, he can't escape a miserable death, he thinks. And yet again, he's got to struggle. On one hand, God has promised me all these good things, and yet I have to face the realities of life. It's not working out as I thought it would be. He goes down to Egypt, and you know the beautiful story. His brothers come back, Jacob's sons come home and say, "Dad, you won't believe this. Not only is Joseph alive, he's running Egypt." And if you had a camera, you'd want to just see his face. He's, "What? What?" And when they keep telling him all the words of Joseph, he can't believe it. "My son is alive. And he's going to be running this country and maybe save us with his power." This is, now he's seeing the picture. Okay, now I'm getting this. God has been with me. You look at chapter 45, verse 26 and forward, and we'll read some of the thoughts that he expresses here. They're beautiful. Chapter 45, verse 26. So the brothers come to him and they tell their father and they said, "Joseph is still alive and he is ruler over all the land of Egypt." And his heart fainted, for he did not believe them. But when they told him all the words of Joseph which he had said to them, and when he saw the wagons which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of their father, Jacob, revived. And Israel said, "It is enough. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die." So Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. And God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, "Jacob, Jacob." And he said, "Here I am." And then he said, "I am the God of your father. Do not yet be afraid. Go down to Egypt, for I will there make of you a great nation. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also bring you up again. And Joseph's hand shall close your eyes." You're going to die there, but you'll be with Joseph, this beautiful son of yours that you thought was dead for so many years. Incredible. He lives with Joseph for 17 years in a beautiful part of Egypt in Goshen, and he eventually dies 70 years later at the age of 147. But before he finishes his life and departs, as he's blessing Joseph's two sons, He makes this statement that's powerful in Genesis chapter 48, verses 15 and 16. And he blessed Joseph and said, "The God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has led me all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads. And in them let my name be perpetuated, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth." Jacob now realizes, yes, God has led me all my life. Through the threat of my brother, my daughter being assaulted, my sons taking horrible vengeance, my son Joseph possibly dying, me being in a famine. Yes, he has been there, even though I didn't make sense of it and thought, how could it be together, God's promises and my messy life? But he was the whole time. He was with me all those years. And you know what's interesting? As I read this a while back, it may be, there may be an indication here that Jacob did actually grow in his love and respect for Leah. Because we're told something about her, that she was buried in the family tomb. Look at Genesis chapter 49, verses 29 through 31. Again, he's finishing his blessing of the sons. And he says, "All these are the 12 tribes of Israel. And this is what their father said to them as he blessed them, blessing each with the blessing suitable to him. And then he charged them and he said to them, 'I am to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, to the east of Mamre, in the land of Canaan, which Abraham brought with the field from Ephron the Hittite to possess as a burying place. There they buried Abraham and Sarah, his wife, and there they buried Isaac and Rebekah, his wife. And there I buried Leah, the field, the cave that is were purchased from the Hittites." Now, he buried Leah there, in the family tomb of honor, you could say. Why did he do that? I suspect he had some love and devotion for her eventually over time. That's what I like to think his story played out. And you know, there are two recommendations, or you could say, or commendations of Leah. The first one is in Ruth, when Boaz is being spoken to by the city elders. They said, "May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home, Rachel, like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the family of Israel." And you know what's something about Leah that's interesting? It made me think of this verse. "Your beauty should not come from outward adornment, such as elaborate hairstyles and the wearing of gold jewelry or fine clothes. Rather, it should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight." Leah was unattractive physically, but the indications are clear that she relied on God and prayed to God, and as a result, she built up Israel, and this is what she was like, a woman who was really pretty inside. And I think Jacob showed that respect for her by burying her in the family tomb with Abraham and Isaac and the others. Then one last slide or so I'll share with you. By burying Leah and wishing to be buried himself, not where his beloved Rachel lay, but where Abraham and Isaac lay, Jacob expressed his faith in the God of Abraham and Isaac and his desire of having his portion with them beyond the grave. Again, we just recap very quickly before we conclude. Jacob was born because God heard the prayers of his mother, Rebekah, and Isaac, his father. He had godly parents. If you read on in the text, they were very concerned about Esau marrying the wrong woman. They were distressed by that. They knew that they were God's people and they needed to stay that way. So he had that benefit of being answered to prayer and had godly parents. His grandfather was Abraham. He was promised by God in visions and dreams that he would be cared for. He had wealth. He had lots of children. And yet he suffered lots of heartaches. We've covered some of those. But all these things happened to him. And as a quiet man, he obviously thought about them. And they deeply disturbed him. And he struggled. But at the end, he was able to say, okay, I see it all working out now. I'm going to Egypt to see my son Joseph. I'll die there in peace. And now he could connect all the dots. His life came to a peaceful conclusion. 2 points in closing. Jacob's life shows us that a relationship with God does not make us immune to heartache. I mean, we probably would expect it to, wouldn't we? You become a Christian, things should be smooth sailing, but they're often not. Your children go off the rails. You have health issues. Your spouse departs, hates you. You can't stand the people you work with. You name it. These things don't go away because you're a Christian. And I thought maybe when we teach people to become Christians, we should include this, that your life may not always improve, but you'd be better prepared to deal with those things than if you were not a Christian. And secondly, I thought to myself, I had to say this. While Jacob's life ended on a very happy note, with some of these issues resolved and all the dots were connected, wouldn't it be nice if we could say the same thing to ourselves, that life will end on a very tidy, cleaned up fashion and have a happy ending? But that's not the case many times. You and I may die with some things unresolved with family and friends. We may die with some things in a mess. But that can still be okay. Because what does it really matter if we still end up joining Jacob in the afterlife? When heartache comes, we want explanations. God gives promises. He never explained to Jacob, this is why Dinah was attacked. This is why Joseph was taken away and you thought he was dead for so many years. This is why Esau did this and so forth. Never explained. I'm sure as a deep-thinking man, he worried about these things. God says, I'm giving you promises, Jacob. You're going to be protected. But I'm not telling you how or why. You just walk with me. The instant we get to heaven, our first thought will be, now I understand. I can't recall where I found this quote. I read it some months ago, and I wish I wrote it down, but it's a powerful one to me. I may not understand how my life is unfolding now with all the hassles that you and I may go through. But maybe somehow I'll know the second I'm in heaven if we're found faithful. You'll join me in that. If you're not a Christian, the sad reality is you don't have the hope that Jacob had. He wanted to be buried in a certain location to be united, even in death, with his forefathers, because he was expecting something beyond that tomb. If you're not a Christian, you can't say that of yourself, because you don't have it. And secondly, if you've drifted from God, you can come back. You may be struggling with God now. You may be wanting to live a certain way. You know it's not right, but you can come back. And as we stand and sing this song, we'd be glad to help you in making that process come to pass as you want to seek and do God's will.